Hello and welcome to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. I'm Ralph Russo, the college football writer with the Associated Press. This week, we interrupt the football to bring you college basketball. The bracket is back after last season's devastating cancellation of the NCAA tournament. Sure, we're a football show, but everybody is a college basketball fan this time of year, and maybe you can use a little help with your bracket. I'm in Indianapolis to cover the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, but I needed a real college basketball expert to walk me through. Joining me will be my AP colleague, Aaron Beard, who covers college basketball nationally and does so from the epicenter of the sport, Tobacco Road. We'll roll through the bracket looking for upsets and surprises. I will force Aaron to make a Final Four pick, and maybe I'll make one too, or maybe I'll at least allude to one. And I promise we will do some football at the end in the three and out. Thanks for listening to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. You can find us on Westwood One Podcast, Apple Podcasts, just about anywhere you like to get your podcast. If you like what you hear, give us a good review and a good rating. It helps college football fans find us, and it helps us find more college football fans. If you'd like to email the show, send questions and comments to AP Top 25 Mailbag. That's AP Top 25 Mailbag at gmail.com. I'd like to hit some of those email next week, so send away and we'll definitely get to them. And away we go. This week on the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast, well, we have to talk basketball because it's basketball time. It's college basketball. It's March Madness. The NCAA tournament is this week. So I turn to my friend and colleague, Aaron Beard, one of the AP's fine college basketball writers who lives in the heart of it all when it comes to college basketball down near Tobacco Road in North Carolina. Aaron, we are both in Indianapolis, though we are not together, at least not yet. Hopefully we will see each other at some point. But Aaron, thank you so much for coming on today. I said I can't do this college basketball thing myself. You're the expert, so I needed you to come in and show me the way through these brackets.
Ha, that's fine. And I'm always excited to get you out of football to talk basketball and your love of One Shining Moment.
Oh, you remember that. Yes, I'm one of the few people who isn't a big fan of One Shining Moment. Of course, the highlights are great in this and the setting in which it's played. And honestly, like, here's one thing I will say. So for a long time, I had not covered a Final Four, and you had covered Final Fours. And then I became part of some of the AP's Final Four coverage. You definitely learn to appreciate One Shining Moment more when you're on the floor and it's being played on the scoreboard and the winning team is watching their One Shining Moment. Like, that's when you really sort of like, oh, I get it now. This is very different. So I think I've warmed up to One Shining Moment.
Well, it's important that you do. I'm going to tell you now, you're talking to someone that is all the way in for One Shining Moment. We used it as the introduction for our wedding party at our wedding reception. But we have several sports writers in the group. So it was kind of a fun thing. So, you know, I'm probably a little biased.
Well, you are the basketball guy, and I said for someone who got married in North Carolina, that seems like a perfect match. All right, let me get into this before we get into the brackets, and we definitely will get into the brackets. And by the way, Aaron's wife is a Tar Heel.
But she went to UNC, yeah. But
she.
No, she kind of appreciates all of them now that she's left the sports writing field. She used to do sports writing, a lot of women's basketball, but now she just kind of takes it all in. And she's one of the rare people in the triangle that are not affiliated, really.
Okay. All right. So before we get into the bracket, and we're going to go through, we're not going to go through every game, but we are going to go through the brackets. And by the time we're done with it, you'll have upset picks and Cinderella's and a Final Four. But before we do get into that, there's a couple of sort of college basketball issues I want to get into. And the first one is I do want to talk just for a moment about two teams that aren't here and the fact that Duke and Kentucky are not in the NCAA tournament is a big deal. So I just want to ask you, and these are two teams that have done very well the last couple of years. As you know, Kentucky is sort of the one and done school that really embraced it early with Calipari. And then Coach K kind of shifted his focus and said, hey, I think this might be the way to go too, to just get the best players in here. I don't know if that means anything, that these sort of one and done schools both struggled in the same year and it was a weird COVID year. But when you sort of do an autopsy on what went wrong with Duke and Kentucky, what do you come up with?
Well, I think there was a commonality from the very start with their rosters. You're talking about rosters that were dramatically overhauled. You know, there was a lot of questions coming in of how you replace talent. I believe with Kentucky, the number was 10 newcomers and 7 freshmen, I think is the number. With Duke, you know, they had lost Trey Jones and Vernon Carey from last year's team, who one of them was ACC Player of the Year for the AP, one was ACC Player of the Year for the league. You know, so that's a lot of talent to go out the door. Duke only had 5 returning letter winners, right? So when you start thinking about, okay, what is your starting point? You're already coming in with a lot of upheaval. Then you have everything that's gone on with the COVID pandemic, with altered off seasons, right? The guys are not training the way they normally would. Even, you know, at North Carolina down the road, one of the big things they've done is have the pros come back and play pickup games with the current players at various points over the years. You know, there's a lot those guys can almost informally do to develop, right? Well, all these teams across the country lost those opportunities. And I think Duke and Kentucky in particular were young, and it really was something that was magnified as they began to struggle. And I think, too, you know, again, youth can succeed. We've seen teams, Duke and Kentucky have both won titles with one and done led teams. But, you know, there is a wide range of outcomes, I guess, you know, and if the mix isn't right, it can go south like it really did for Kentucky to start the year.
Okay, another blue blood that is not here, which is, it's weird. It's got to be especially weird for folks in this state. And again, we're both in Indianapolis at this point, that Indiana is not in the tournament that's being completely played in Indianapolis. And, you know, Duke and Kentucky had bad years, and well, that's, you know, that sort of sucks. But I think there's a thought that it's a blip on the radar. Indiana has been trying to find the right mix for a while now, and it thought maybe it had, you know, the rising star coach in Archie Miller, but they just fired Archie Miller. Now, again, I'm not a basketball expert, but I've covered a bunch of A-10 tournaments when Archie was doing his thing at Dayton. And there was, my sense of it was like, oh, this is the guy that Indiana finally needs. Like, this seemed like, you never know how the hire is going to work until the guy actually gets the job. But boy, this seemed like one that made a lot of sense and would be a good fit. And then 4 years later, they haven't even made a tournament. So what went wrong with Archie Miller in Indiana?
Yeah, you know, there's something I would kind of point to beyond just Archie Miller. And I think for whatever reason, he could not quite get things lined. You know, it's almost like the Rubik's Cube of, you know, you've got to line this piece up and line this piece up. Everything's got to fit together. And they never got those pieces together in a overall sense of his tenure. What I find interesting about Indiana, for all the talk about, it is obviously one of the tradition-rich programs, and Bobby Knight won titles, including the last unbeaten national champion. But they haven't had a lot of success in the NCAA tournament now, going back to Bobby Knight's tenure, even the back half of Bobby Knight's tenure. And I don't think that people really – I'm not sure how much that really – the past success maybe resonates with some of the kids today. You know, it's kind of far removed. I mean, I think when I went back and looked, it was, yeah, they went to the NCAA tournament 15 straight years at the end of Bobby Knight's tenure. But the last 6 years of that time, they didn't get out of the opening weekend. You know, they were losing early. They weren't getting past even a Sweet 16. And they've gone to tournaments since, but they've not had any kind of deep, sustained run since Knight, other than when they played Maryland for the title in 2002 under Mike Davis. Mm-hmm. And I think those things become an issue a little bit when you're trying to recruit and you're trying to build a program. The tradition works, it matters, but how long does that carry? when you get further and further removed from those glory days, I think it begins to work against you in the program if you don't have the right fit at the coach. And it just did not work out that way for Archie Miller.
Yeah, you do sort of, as a, you know, again, always equating it to football, you do sort of look at Indiana and wonder if, like, that program isn't Kentucky or Duke. They were, but they're not anymore. And if it is it like a Nebraska situation where time has moved on and that and what we sort of like the old what we thought of Indiana as being is just not, that's just not it anymore. That was a period of time that where Bobby Knight was there, and maybe it can't be replicated. I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll find out going forward. It'd be very interesting to see who gets that job. It just, again, there was just this feeling that like Archie Miller, boy, like that seems like a slam dunk. Like they finally got the right guy, and the fact that it didn't work. And again, now we're in Indiana, in the state of Indiana, and Indiana is not playing in the tournament. And I think that probably was a way to, the thing that finally tipped everything over the edge. Let's get to the brackets. Let's get to the brackets because we got a lot of brackets to go through, and I don't want to keep you all day. So I have not made my picks yet, and we're not going to go through every game because that's just silly. But I came up with a set of questions that we're going to use for each region, right? And so we'll kind of go through each region using these questions. So my first, and we're going to start at what in the bracket that I'm looking at, the top left is the West with Gonzaga as number one. And the question I have for you first, and again, we'll do each bracket the same way, is what do you think of Gonzaga's road to the Final Four? We're going to do this for each number one. Like, you know, Gonzaga's, they're a beast. You know, they're undefeated and they're, maybe they're going to make a run at being one of the great teams of all time in college basketball. But when you sort of see what's in store for them, do you see teams that they match up well with? Do you see teams that you think might be able to give them a handful somewhere? Or do you look at it and sort of say, wow, that's a pretty good path for them?
I think the team that I only had a stumbling block on in that bracket was Iowa, and just because of the offense and Garza. But, you know, let's not forget that Gonzaga's beaten everybody they played, and that included Iowa. And they only one team played them within 10 points, and that was not Iowa. So, you know, I tend to be like, okay, well, the number one overall seed, it's a really tough challenge, you know, to complete that run. But I kind of look at Gonzaga and I'm like, they've been hands down the best team all year to the point that I trust them. Like, right. I've kind of tinkered with my bracket and I keep wanting to just put them right on through to the Final Four. You know, you start looking down that list. Well, you know, who's the fourth seed? Virginia. Well, they beat Virginia too. And not only they beat Virginia, Virginia's coming off this awkward situation with, you know, having to leave the ACC tournament early because of a COVID pause and not, and basically having to, you know, because of a COVID positive test, quarantine and not practice like they normally would coming into Indianapolis. So I just think that Gonzaga has been heads and shoulders above everybody else to me. I trust them. They're top 10 in defense in KenPom. They're number one in offense in KenPom. When you look at that list of guys, I mean, Kispert and Suggs, and you're just thinking they've got so many options and they have an elite coach. And I trust that pretty steadily in this time of the year.
Yeah. So we should say we're recording this a little before the deadline for teams to be replaced. You know, right. The feel here and talking to one person in Indianapolis, I don't know if we're looking towards a lot of that happening, but I think there obviously is still this concern with Virginia. Who knows? Maybe during this podcast, we'll have some breaking news and we'll talk about it. But as of right now, when we're talking, Virginia is still supposed to be getting in later in the week. And you mentioned the All-American, right? Kispert's an All-American. Suggs and one other player were second team All-Americans because that was announced today by the AP, and Timmy are second team All-Americans, and they had another guy who was honorable mention, right?
Yeah, so a lot of talent.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically talking about an all-star team. So, okay, so the road looks pretty good for Gonzaga, again, partially because they've beaten all these teams along this road. So let me get into the rest of the bracket, and part of that is, Any team that you looked at in this bracket and thought that seed is out of whack, it's either too high or too low.
On this one, I didn't have as much of a reaction that way. I was a little surprised that Wichita State was an 11 in the play-in game. But I didn't really have a quibble. There's a couple of the other brackets where I thought, you know, huh, that's curious, you know, okay. But this one is not as much. And I will say this, let me back up to one thing on Gonzaga. The 3 seed in this region is Kansas. And Gonzaga also beat them by double figures. So I figured it was worth noting the 2, 3, and 4 all lost to Gonzaga by double figures in the regular season. So that's a good sign for your chances if you're in that bracket at the top.
Okay, in the West then, again, we're not going to go through every game, but if you look at the West and you're looking for some upsets, and I'll say 12 seed or higher, though, to be honest, at this point, 12-5, there's so many 12-5 upsets, I'm not even sure if that's an upset anymore. It seems to me the dividing line is more 13, where you start getting, you know, what are a little more rare upsets. However, we'll just say anything, any 12 seed or higher that you're going to pick.
Well, you know, I tend to lean towards 12s because they keep happening and I keep just saying, well, I'm just going to keep picking them until I get the right one and one will bear out, right? So I'll probably lean towards UCSB, partly because, you know, the Creighton situation with what happened with McDermott and the racially insensitive remark, you don't know how that affects, you know, the mindset of a team. I mean, that there could be real consequences in the locker room for how those players feel about things. So, well, you know, that to me, those things are always kind of a question you can't really measure, but it's a 12-5 game. So I'm already kind of, you know, inclined to pick it. I am curious too, like I said, we're talking earlier in the week about how Virginia is going to handle coming out and playing Ohio, which, you know, they've got a kid named Jason Preston who's, 6'4 guard. And, you know, you just, it's a lot to ask a team to quarantine and, you know, not train the way you normally would. I know defense is what they do, but they're not quite the same defensive level as they have been in past years. And, you know, they're offensively okay, but, you know, defensively they're 33rd in KenPom. You know, that's not what you normally expect. Whereas that team that won the title 2 years ago was 5th. You know, that's a big departure from the normal stats under Tony Bennett. So I think those two games probably appeal to me the most in that regard.
Okay. So there are your possible upsets. What teams do you have getting through there into past the second round? Let's just say what's going to be the regionals there, the regional semifinals there. Gonzaga against... Boy, you could end up with the 13-12 game UCSB and Ohio and one of them playing for a Sweet 16.
Yeah, and I thought about that when I was doing my bracket the first time. I actually had that matchup and I was like, I really don't know who I'd pick there, to be honest. I mean, I haven't seen them play nearly as much. You know, I've read about them, but part of me is also like, am I really going to question, you know, I think Tony Bennett's a really good coach and he's technically Virginia's the reigning national champion from 2019 in Minneapolis. And he has proven he knows how to guide a team back from the lowest of lows when the 16-1 upset against UMBC. And man, that they can defend you. They may not be as good as past Virginia teams, but they are still a difficult matchup for anybody to play. So part of me is like questioning if I'm being a little too hard on Virginia, which won the regular season in the ACC this year. I know it wasn't the best year in the ACC, but they still claim the 1 seed for the 5th time in 8 years in the ACC tournament.
Okay, so you got Gonzaga, Virginia there, lower part of the bracket where KU and Iowa are the 2 and 3. But who you got coming through?
Gonzaga and Iowa. I really enjoy watching Iowa play, obviously, with Garza and, you know, offense. But I can't pick against Gonzaga in that bracket, man. I just, you know, I want to be like, let's not pick the obvious number one. But I don't look at that bracket and think someone really is going to get them. That's kind of my initial reaction.
who faces Iowa in that, in the bottom there? Do you think KU gets through, or maybe a USC with Mobley, or?
Yeah, I kind of gravitated towards Kansas again. Part of this is a coaching thing for me, that if you've got a coach that's won a title or been to a Final Four, I probably give you a little bit more benefit of the doubt, but Mobley is really good, obviously. And, you know, so Kansas seems like they kind of figured out a little bit of some things coming down the stretch, or were playing better, but I guess they too have some, I guess, COVID uncertainties as well. That's going to be a variable in this equation as we go forward.
Okay, so let's go. You're very chalky up at the top there. So let's go down to the lower left is the East, where Michigan is the number one seed. You know, Michigan stumbled a little bit at the end there, though. You know, again, tremendous season for the most part. So again, same question as far as like the path for Michigan. Look at the whole bracket and the path. And do you see, you know, teams that you think, boy, that could be, maybe they might not get to Michigan, but boy, if Michigan had to play that team, that would be a problem.
Well, so my thought about Michigan is I'm concerned in the sense of Isaiah Livers' foot injury. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a 6'7" forward who can score and rebound. You know, I saw him play a year ago at the Battle for Atlantis in the Bahamas. Enjoyed his game. Obviously, Juwan Howard has really found a good groove with this group. But, you know, that's a key piece to lose at this time of year when you're not sure what his status is. It doesn't sound like it's imminent for him to return because of this foot injury that he's out indefinitely with. So I'm not sure that they're going to get much further. I question whether they can beat a team like Florida State in the Sweet 16.
Gotcha. Yeah. Florida State, you know, I think a lot of us would love to see Leonard Hamilton get to a Final Four. He's done such a great job at Florida State, turning that into a basketball school. And all of his teams always sort of have that same, like, feel and vibe to them and look to them. They always, it's like, how many 6'8" wings with long arms can you possibly find? Like, they right. seem to have, yeah, everybody's between 6'4" and 6'8" and can really jump and has long arms. And you just sort of like, boy, like every team is kind of the same way with FSU. So that's Michigan's road. And you're right. Florida State certainly looks like they could be problematic. When you look for an upset within there, within that East bracket, 12 or higher. Now, again, I know that 12 Georgetown against Colorado, that looks like an interesting one. Is it there or are there any else? Are there any deeper sleepers in there?
Yeah, I've got a friend of mine, former sports writer at the News and Observer, who's now in radio, Joe Giglio, who is an adamant believer that you should not pick a team that comes off a surprise tournament run. Mm-hmm. So he's just hammering that point recently this week. So, you know, yes, the Georgetown Colorado game fits the 12-5, but, you know, the question you have with any tournament game, and this is true whether it's a 5-12 or whatever, how much evidence do you give? How much weight do you give to a conference tournament versus the regular season, right? The body of work. And so, you know, that makes it a little tricky to pick some of these. Michigan State is not an upstart by any means, but they're in the first four. If they played BYU, I mean, BYU scared Gonzaga pretty good in the West Coast Conference Tournament championship game. But I mean, Tom Izzo, again, I'm going to continue to lean back towards coaches. That's an 11 seed, but also, you know, that assumes Michigan State would beat UCLA. And how about that? That Michigan State or UCLA, these tradition rich programs, are the low seed there in an 11-6 matchup, whoever wins. Not your normal upstart low seed, but, you know, maybe one of those could give BYU some trouble.
You know, that's interesting you mentioned Michigan State there, because I do think a lot of people are seeing, like, Michigan State seems to be a high ceiling team, right? And they've also had some just awful losses where, they turn the ball over and they just completely come apart. As a, you know, the husband of a Michigan State fan who has, you know, tried to watch some of their games this year, it's been a little painful at times. But again, this is also a team that has beaten some of the highly seeded teams in this tournament. So the idea of, like, yeah, maybe if they can just get a little momentum going, you know, Michigan State against Texas, is that some place that would be interesting? Let me ask you for one other, again, if you're looking for a big time long shot and you're a person who likes coaches, right, with a track record, is there any chance that Iona could do something against Alabama there with Rick Pitino. Because I got to think, again, if you're looking to roll the dice for a big-time long shot, Rick Pitino, like, that's got to be a place where you'd say, yeah, sure, I'll give it a flyer on that.
You know, what's funny is I am still wrestling with how good I think Alabama is. Nate Oates is a very good coach. And they are I covered them in the Maui tournament this year when it was in Asheville, tropical Asheville, North Carolina. They lost to Stanford to start the year. And I remember thinking, okay, well, it's, you know, incremental steps for them. And all of a sudden they went berserk from three. Like, they're averaging 10 threes a game. They don't necessarily shoot a great percentage, but they make a ton. That's a lot of firepower with the way they play offense. And I love the idea of Pitino back in the tournament and maybe pulling off from the underdog standpoint. But I just think that the 3-point shooting that Alabama can do, I mean, they hit 23 against LSU in January. I think that pretty much in my mind precludes an upset when I'm picking the bracket on that. Even if I was feeling brave.
Okay, so you're not going to go deep. You're not going to go brave and deep on those first round upsets. But let's play it through the Sweet 16. Again, you were 1 through 4 up on that west side.
All right.
On that west bracket. On the east bracket, what's your Sweet 16 there?
Yeah, right there. I'm 1 through 4 there too. But then that's where I kind of begin to. I think I'm leaning towards the underdogs going into the regional finals or the lower seeds.
Okay.
Right now, I would go Florida State over Michigan. Because I think, look, Florida State had 25 turnovers against Georgia Tech. That was sort of like, you know, and they had a bad loss against Notre Dame. But Leonard Hamilton is, you know, routinely finishing top of the ACC now, top tier, with all, you know, they don't get the credit they deserved. It's a shame that team last year didn't get to play in an NCAA tournament because they were really good. But even the guys they have now, they're strong, they're physical, they're mature, you know, older guys. You know, they've got guys that can really go after you and defensively can really get after you, tough guys. And I just think that that could really spell trouble for any team. In the lower half, I'm kind of being seduced by Texas a little bit. You know, played well in the Big 12. We've seen them have some really good moments this year. But I'm kind of going back and forth on that with Alabama. Right now I lean Texas. So I kind of have a 4 and a 3 in a regional final there if I was to do it right now.
Yeah, I'm going to hold your feet to the fire here. Are you going to have Texas or FSU to get through that?
I'm kind of inclined for FSU, actually.
Oh, man, you're just being...
I'm taking a risk on this one.
Not that big of a risk, though. I guess I would wonder, like, how much do you play into the conference thing? You know, the Big 12 has been really good. Obviously, the Big 10 put 9 teams in here. In my sort of layperson's opinion from watching games, I almost felt like the Big 12 was actually better. You know, those like top 5 or 6 in the Big 12, maybe just the quality of play or the style of play in some ways was a little better. Aside from Iowa and Illinois are obviously really good. So maybe I'm not even hitting the target there. But I don't know. I just felt like the Big 12 might be every bit as good as the Big 10 this year. And I'm wondering, do you lean into that conference stuff, or do you think it's overblown? Are you? Do. Yeah.
Yes, I do this year. Because look, I think that stuff matters. Like, look at the ACC's track record in some recent years, right? When they had 3 number one seeds in 2019, won a national title. They had a couple years where they had like 4 and 5 teams in the Sweet 16 or the Elite 8. I think those season-long battles matter. Like, that's the thing. Like, I'm coin flipping on Florida State, Texas. Like, if you had asked me at like noon today, I might have said Texas right now. Like, I like both of those teams, you know, a good bit. And I just think that they can be interesting, you know, as far as picks to go deep. I mean, they're not like low seeds. Like, they obviously are good teams. You expect them to do well in the tournament, but, you know, they could have a Final Four moment, you know? I mean, you know, Texas hasn't put it together maybe until this year under Shaka Smart, right? Florida State has been to a regional final and been to a Sweet 16 in the last few years, you know? So, you know, they've got some guys that have seen, you know, some experience and played, you know, for an ACC tournament championship this year, won the regular season for the first time last year. Right now, I lean Florida State, but you know, I might sit there and like have to text you like on the first night and be like, I should have picked Texas. So.
That's right. We'll have all this all the time here together to change our picks and you can maybe convince me of something different. So the top right bracket is the South. Baylor is the number one seed there. What's any potholes for Baylor? As someone who just watched Villanova really struggle without Colin Gillespie at the Garden, I noticed at the top there, like, you know, that would have been an interesting one, a fully healthy Villanova, but then maybe, again, a fully healthy Villanova might not be the five seed.
Yeah, I think, you know, and that kind of leads into, you know, the question about seeding. Like, I think what's happened to Villanova with the Gillespie injury is so huge to the point that, you know, I just don't know. Are they really the fifth best team in that bracket right now? I don't know. I mean, but that's a huge impact to what they do and how they play. I mean, and look, it applies to any floor leader, right? But especially with how Villanova's, you know, Gillespie's been valuable to them, experience, you know, that to me doesn't, you know, I look at Baylor and I say, okay, you know, you win the first round game. I'm going to trust North Carolina in the second round because Roy Williams is 29-0 in first round games. So they're always ready to play. North Carolina could give Baylor some trouble with its offensive rebounding ability, but Carolina doesn't shoot the ball well from outside. You know, so like, I don't know if Carolina can shoot the ball outside and not turn the ball over against a team like Baylor. So I look at Baylor in the top half of that bracket and I think, okay, that's a pretty good setup, but it's not going to be an easy push, you know, through the first weekend and into the second weekend.
Right. Cause then you have Villanova, Purdue. And you're right, Villanova may even be as high as a five seed there.
Yeah.
When you start looking, so now Winthrop at a 12 against Villanova, that's a team that has built up a little tournament history. Has been around a while. Like they're not new to this thing. Is that another 5-12 where you're thinking, yeah, I'll jump on that 12?
That is one I absolutely would jump on, no doubt. Because, you know, look, I think, you know, obviously winning matters, right? One loss team, you know, but, you know, I just think that Villanova's situation is just, you catch a bad break sometimes. Remember Kenyon Martin at Cincinnati, right? That changed everything for the Bearcats when he had that injury, you know, and they were seeded out of a one, you know, but, you know, Winthrop's got, you know, when you lose one game, I think that stuff kind of carries over, right? You continue to succeed, you continue to win. I think momentum matters. They have a guy named Chandler Vaudrin who has three triple doubles to lead the country. You know, he's a 6'7" guard. You know, you've got some pieces. Peck Kelsey's there. That one screams out 12-5. Partly because Winthrop is good, and partly because Villanova's, you know, really having a lot to overcome right now.
There's another very high seed here that I got to ask you about, because I know it's been, I don't know if it's a trendy pick, but I think people, their eyes go to it because Colgate's weird, right? Colgate only played, what, about 15 or 16 games because of the way the Patriot League schedule played out. They had that crazy like top 10 net ranking at one point for a big point of the right. season. They also score a ton. Are they the leading scoring team in the country or top two or three scoring teams in the country? Is that a place where, I mean, there are 14 against a three Arkansas, and Arkansas is obviously, you know, pretty damn good.
Right.
But how is that one where you sort of look at and go, well, maybe, like, you know, again, if we're looking for that long shot.
Yeah, no, I think that's an interesting one because I was looking this up on Selection Sunday. They're number two in the country in scoring. 86.3 was that's where they entered Selection Sunday. The only team that was higher was Gonzaga. You know, so, you know, they can score, but they were also shooting like around 49%. They were shooting 40% from three. So it wasn't just like an inefficient offensive team. And then Arkansas, obviously, you know, Moses Moody, and they've come and, you know, had a great year. You know, Colgate could be a fun game to watch, just in the sense of, you know, you could see plenty of points. Arkansas is averaging, I think, 82. So plenty of points. And look, if a team that can score in bunches and can shoot from outside gets hot, that's one of those recipes you see for one of those March moments. You know, the team that couldn't miss, momentum gets going, and they ride that wave. As good as Arkansas has been, you know, Colgate's kind of an interesting team, but you're right. That net ranking was just one of those things that all year you just kind of looked at and you're like, wait a minute, am I reading this right? I mean, I'm looking right now, the final net was 9. I mean, you know, and they were sandwiched between Ohio State, Loyola, Chicago, and Kansas were the next two teams after them. So, you know, from a position standpoint, that's pretty nice, but you're just kind of like, I'm not sure how that happened exactly.
Right. So. Listen, with any of these matchups, when you see the Power 5 team, you're always going to assume the Power 5 team is going to have a little more athleticism than the mid-major, especially a kind of a lower, like one bid mid-major like Colgate. So you assume that, again, the athleticism is there, but if one team is shooting better and Colgate's a very good shooting team, that's where your upsets are born. So at the top half, it sounds like you got Baylor going through. Now, I could see, again, that Villanova, Winthrop, Purdue, North Texas thing, that could get a little messy there. But Baylor against who in the Sweet 16?
I had Purdue. I was going with Purdue because of, I think, like you said, I think the Big Ten and the Big 12, I think going back to that a little bit, I'm going to trust that when it's kind of close and I'm not as sure on some things where I'm like looking and can't really decide. I think if you survive and to play your way into the tournament through those rugged schedules and those teams, I think that does prepare you for what's ahead in March. I think it matters.
Gotcha. Okay. So the bottom of that bracket, where the two is Ohio State, with the two is Ohio State and the three is Arkansas. Who do you got getting through there to the Sweet 16? And I have a funny feeling I know where you might lean here if you're talking conferences.
I like Ohio State. They've had a really tough comeback against Illinois in the Big Ten title game. You know, when, you know, the Selection Sunday's right there, they got down, I think, 15 right off. And, you know, they really grinded that thing out and it turned into a fun finish that kind of delayed everything into Selection Sunday. And I went ahead and trusted, again, coaches and conferences. My namesake, Chris Beard at Texas Tech.
I had a feeling you were going to go Texas Tech over Arkansas there.
Let's go with the coach and the Big 12, with Texas Tech on that. And then I had Ohio State coming out of that bottom half of that bracket
against Baylor. And then who's your final four team there? Is Ohio State or Baylor?
I want to pick Baylor, but I think I'm leaning Ohio State.
That would be a little surprising because Baylor has been the consensus second best team behind Gonzaga. Right. In fact, those two teams were supposed to play. Now Baylor hit a little bit of a skid late in the year against the at the end of the Big 12 season. But nonetheless, first of all, they were coming out of a late COVID break.
Right.
And they're also playing in the Big 12, which is pretty damn good. I mean, they got eliminated by Cade Cunningham in the Big 12 championship, in the Big 12 conference.
Let me say this. I would think the first game they played back against out of the pause, I think it was Iowa State, who was, you know, really bad this year. And then they lost to Kansas and, you know, but then other than that, they lost one game. And I've kind of thought they were it was them and Gonzaga and then everybody else. But, you know, again, Ohio State's a good team. I think they've got good coaching. Again, this is another one where you kind of look at it when you do your bracket. Sometimes you kind of get through and you say, okay, I've got like 4-1 seeds. Well, that's not what I want to do. And then you start tinkering with it a little bit, right?
Right.
So I think that's part of where if you're asking me, like Michigan is the one seed that I'm the most concerned with. I think probably for me, then I think I'm a little bit not sure about Baylor or this just. But again, this is like picking between a Lamborghini and a Ferrari. Like they're great teams. I love mm-hmm. all of them, but I'm trying to figure that part out. And I wonder a little bit, you know, is this just one of those years that maybe one of these high teams that you think shouldn't lose is going to get tripped up in a regional final? You know, that's one that I'm still wrestling with too. So you're getting me when I'm wrestling with a lot of these, but part of this, I think too, is this year has just been so hard to read other than Gonzaga and Baylor for that matter. Everybody else there's been a real potential to see this team could do something in March. This team could get things together in March. And I just think it's going to be an incredibly unpredictable thing in terms of how teams are going to handle being, controlled environment instead of the word bubble that they're using with the NCAA. But how they're going to handle this. And, you know, that's a big variable. And I don't really know what to expect with some of these in that regard.
Okay. Bottom half is the Midwest and Illinois is the one seed there. And I've really enjoyed watching that team. I don't know, maybe because I'm just reminiscing on the last Illinois team that went to the Final Four with D Brown and Darren Williams. And that was kind of a fun team. And this team kind of reminds me a little bit of that, only in a sense that it's a fun team to watch.
Right.
So when you look at that Illinois road to the Final Four there, you know, with everybody's favorite underdog, Loyola Chicago, sitting there as a possible second rounder in the 8-9 game against Georgia Tech. We found out Sister Jean will be at the tournament, which is really cool. You got Tennessee, Oklahoma State. So you also have like maybe the best player in the country in Cade Cunningham is in that bracket too. What does the road to the Final Four look like for Illinois?
Well, you know what? That I am incredibly intrigued by that 8-9 game because Loyola Chicago has been great. They've lost only twice since the start of 2021. But Georgia Tech is the kind of team too that, you know, they just won their first ACC tournament title since 1993. And they haven't lost since February 12th. They were 9-8 as of mid-February and looking stuck on the bubble and probably going the wrong direction. And then they didn't lose again. And they beat Florida State. They beat Florida State twice this year. You know, they beat Virginia Tech. They beat Syracuse. You know, they beat teams that are in the NCAA tournament. I am incredibly intrigued by that one, especially because, you know, I'm going to jump ahead to one of your other questions. When you ask about underseeded teams, Loyola Chicago, I mean, if you look at KenPom's numbers, they have them number 9 overall. And they're an 8 seed in this bracket. So I think that second round game could be really interesting, whoever comes out of that one. But I do think Illinois, I mean, Iodesumu, Kofi Coburn, like they've got some pieces and they are fun to watch. Like you said, I think that it's a favorable draw, but it also could be them running into Cade Cunningham in the Sweet 16. And that could be fun with Oklahoma State.
Yeah, Cunningham is quite a talent, and you know, I was also seemingly a pretty decent dude. I had a chance to. I don't know if people may have caught it on Twitter, because it'll be out there, and you can find it on my feed. All America Day was today for the AP. Cunningham was an All-American, as well as Jared Butler from Baylor, Luca Garza from Iowa, Io from Illinois, and Corey Kispert from Gonzaga. No big surprises there, big stars. But we had a chance to chat, or I had a chance to chat with Cade Cunningham and Jared Butler from Baylor for about 15, 20 minutes, and we live streamed it on Twitter. It was a lot of fun. And Cade and Jared both did a great job, and they were also really fun to talk to. They were really interesting and laid back guys. But Cunningham's game is amazing, and I think it took me about two or three times watching Oklahoma State to realize, oh, he's the point guard. He's the point guard on this team. This 6'8 kid who looks like he might be able to like bulk up and play power forward in the NBA is actually the point guard on this team. He's a pretty remarkable player.
Yeah. And look, I mean, they, you know, it takes freshman time, right? And he's been good all year, but, you know, Oklahoma State's, you know, they pushed all the way to the conference championship game. They're playing well. They beat Baylor. They've got some momentum at their back. And, they are a lot of fun to watch. I mean, again, if you come through that Big 12, you know, you look at their schedule and it's like they beat Texas Tech, they beat Oklahoma. They beat Baylor, you know, beat West Virginia twice. I mean, you start looking at that, you're like, well, that checks off pretty much every matchup you think, the kind of matchup you could see in the tournament in terms of, you know, tough competitive games. And they've been tested and they could, you know, they could make they could be a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they give, you know, Illinois a good tussle in the Sweet 16.
Okay. Anybody of those really low seeds, you know, the 14, 15, you know, 12, 13 range, you know, 12 is Oregon State against Tennessee. And Oregon State was one of the sort of, you know, bid stealers along with Georgetown. And I guess it goes back to our pal Joe Giglio, who was talked about, don't take the team that made the miracle run through the conference tournament, because that would be Oregon State. They made the surprising run through the Pac-12 to get into this tournament. Though I must admit, Tennessee's a team, and again, you know, I don't watch as much of this as you. This is a team that seems to be one of those, like, I've seen Tennessee play and they look really, really good. Like, wow, that's the best team in the SEC. I don't care what the records say. And then there are other times I'm like, well, do they score enough for me? So I don't know. I mean, I wonder if the Beavers got a chance against the Vols there.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of have the same reaction as you. You know, when I watch, I mean, it's just, again, it's. I think it's hard this year to tell where things stand with some of these teams. I will say, you know, they started, you know, they were 10-1 and 12-3, but then, you know, coming through February, Tennessee was alternating wins with losses every time for a whole month. And, you know, from a momentum standpoint, that gives you a little bit of pause where you say, you know, you really would rather see a team be like, oh, we've won 8 out of 10, not, you know, 5 out of 9 or whatever.
Right.
I think those things matter. One thing I would say about low seeds, you know, it was a shame that Liberty got paired up with Oklahoma State, because as much as I enjoy watching Oklahoma State, you know, I was excited about, like, Liberty from a 3-point percentage standpoint. They're one of the best in the country at shooting the three, 39%, the sixth in the country. Those teams always intrigue me. Maybe you don't have the athleticism to play or the depth to play with, you know, toe to toe with one of the power conference teams, but you have, you know, multiple guards, let's say, that can shoot the three, right? Those teams can kind of find a way to equalize. And then if momentum gets going, you hit a couple shots and your teammate hits a couple shots. Those are teams that seem like when they get going, they can be like really explosive with a potential to get an upset. And if you shoot 39% from three on a year as a team, that's a good indication that you might be one of those teams. But obviously, you know, the talent of going up against someone like Cade Cunningham is a tough matchup, as opposed to, you know, like, that's one of those where maybe if they played another 4 or 5 or 6 or whatever in another bracket, I might have been like Liberty, you know. But right now I'm pretty high on Oklahoma State. You know, another one I think too, this is another one of those teams that is a name brand but has a double digit seed by its name, and it's Syracuse. And I'm only saying this because of Buddy Boeheim. He had like 27 against North Carolina State in the ACC tournament and then went off for, you know, 30 against Virginia. You know, I mean, it was, you know, he got hot and he couldn't miss. And obviously Boeheim, you know, again, the coaching principle of a guy that's won in March and has been to a Final Four matters. But, you know, if you get a guy that gets that unconscious, you know, in the tournament, that can really help you when you already have, let's say, some athleticism, some length. You play that zone that maybe teams have a little bit of trouble with. They're not as comfortable with it. They're playing San Diego State. From a seed standpoint, that seems like the kind of game that could go, could be a low seed upset in that regard. But again, Syracuse is a name brand. The other thing I would just say is, Houston and Cleveland State. That's another one of those games you look at and you're just like, I remember, was it Mouse McFadden? Am I thinking of that?
Yes, exactly. A long time ago. We're old. Yeah. That was a long time ago.
Yeah. So you think back about that and you kind of have a little bit of a sentimental reaction, like, oh, Cleveland State, you know, I don't know if they would upset Houston, but, you know, it just kind of, whenever I see that, I think about, you know, they had a big run before. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let me see here. You got Illinois and Cade Cunningham and Oklahoma State on the top half there. On the bottom half, where West Virginia is the three and Houston is the two. Are you going to do 2 and 3 there, or are we going to make a little Syracuse deal here and have that zone wreck some things?
No, I'm going to go with West Virginia over Syracuse, and then I'm going to go out on a little bit of a limb and try Clemson over Houston.
Okay. All right. Clemson. So Clemson. Yeah. That gives us a Clemson West Virginia. Yep. In that Sweet 16 game, and who wins that?
I would say West Virginia, because again, we'll go back to, I think obviously Huggins, Big 12 matters. Clemson has had some real ups and downs this year. They're kind of an intriguing team though, because if you go back and look, they started 9-1 and then they went into one of those COVID pauses and they came out and lost by 35 to Virginia. They lost a game to Duke by 26. There was kind of this four losses and five game stretch where they really looked lost. But then they emerged out of that and they ended up winning like six of their last seven come down the stretch. Now they lost to Miami in the ACC tournament, but 16-6, Amir Sims is a good player. Why not a team like Clemson, that's got some athleticism and had, before they got that mid-year bump that they hit in the road, they were a pretty good team. So, I'm kind of intrigued by that. And look, I may be a little bit biased on this because I covered Houston in person one time this year and they lost at East Carolina in that game. And East Carolina has really struggled for a long time. It was ECU's first win against a ranked team since they beat Dwayne Wade at Marquette in December of 2002. And so I saw Houston on maybe one of their worst nights of the year, So I probably look at that and think, I'm not trusting Houston as much, but that's probably just my fault because as a friend of mine said to me, you were like one of only a handful of people in the building that were even solving. So I'll have to let that go.
So I suspect you're going to have Illinois coming through there on your final four line. I'm guessing here because you got your four in the East and you got your two up in the South and you have Gonzaga obviously as your one. So that leaves room for another one in Illinois. Boy, they've been playing great lately. So am I guessing correctly in saying that you got Illinois in the final four there?
Yeah, you are correct, sir. Yeah, okay. I like Illinois a lot. Absolutely.
So then we'll wrap it up like this. Who's going to play Monday night? It's still going to be a Monday night now that the tournament dates have changed a little bit throughout the first couple of weeks here. So don't tune in Thursday looking for Thursday morning looking for games. The first four is on Thursday. The first round kicks off Saturday. So we'll have the last of the second round games on Monday. That tweaks it. Like I said, that's a little different this year. However, what's not different is the final four is on a Saturday and the championship games on a Monday. All things go well. Who plays on Monday night?
I'm going to stick with Gonzaga playing on Monday night, and I think I'm going to go Illinois.
Okay. I have a feeling that's going to be a pretty common pick these days. And I'm certainly not knocking you because I have a feeling I might go that way too when all said and done. So there's Mark Few. Do the Zags finally get that national championship?
I think they do. It's hard to go unbeaten. Nobody's done it since 76. UNLV went in the Final Four in 91 unbeaten and lost. Kentucky did it in 15 and lost. At some point, somebody's going to do it. And it seems like this year that team is equipped to do it. They've got the scoring. They've got the coaching. And, maybe they've handled things a little, maybe they're equipped to handle things and all this uncertainty a little bit better. So why not trust them? At some point, someone's going to do it.
All right. Well, Aaron Beard is one of the AP's man in North Carolina, covers North Carolina sports, but he also covers college basketball from a national perspective, knows it up and down, lives on Tobacco Road. Aaron, hopefully we will see each other soon behind masks. But we will see each other soon here in Indianapolis. Very much appreciate you coming on and doing this and running us through the bracket. Again, we will work together a lot in the next upcoming days. And I very much look forward to it.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it. Thanks, man.
And now three and out. First down. What are you doing, Nebraska? Brett McMurphy's report late last week revealed that the Huskers were looking into buying their way out of next season's road game against Oklahoma and instead playing a home game against a low-level FBS team like Old Dominion or New Mexico State. It was a terrible look and a terrible idea. Nebraska has been getting dunked on a lot nationally, and some of that probably has been a bit unfair dating back to all the issues that went on in the Big Ten, but this is different. I doubt many, if any, Nebraska fans would defend this bit of maneuvering by AD Bill Moose and coach Scott Frost. The Cornhuskers aren't what they were when Oklahoma was their biggest rival. And this year's game isn't looking promising for the Huskers. But how can you ask your fans to support you like a program with championship pedigree and big time aspirations if you're going to avoid playing other programs that also have those traits? I will say this, I would have loved to have been listening in on the conversations where multiple people came away thinking, yes, not playing Oklahoma, that's a good idea. Definitely something we should look into. Was there nobody to say, hey guys, really? Second down. After we recorded last week, Kansas dropped the other shoe in what has been, what was just an awful week for the Jayhawks. And they fired AD Jeff Long following the firing of coach Les Miles. The school is hiring an AD first, and then the AD will hire the coach. But I'm wondering if this might end up indirectly being a package deal similar to what we saw play out at Tennessee. The Vols hired Danny White away from UCF to be the AD, and then White hired UCF coach Josh Heupel to lead the football team. Dennis Dodd from CBS reported Mark Allnut, the AD at Buffalo, is under consideration by Kansas. I think Buffalo's Lance Leipold would be a good fit for Kansas as coach. I know there have been a lot of ideas about how Kansas needs to take a novel approach when it comes to X's and O's. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but that place needs a top-to-bottom rebuild that includes shaking off the general apathy that has enveloped that program. Apathy was a big problem at Buffalo for a long time before Leipold got there. I think a builder is more important than a play caller for Kansas right now. Third down. Judging by Twitter, always a perilous act, of course, I am very much in the minority when it comes to the tweaking of the overtime format proposed by the Rules Committee last week. A couple of years back, a change was made to go with what I like to call two-point shootout after the third round of possessions for each team. Teams would not get a full series of downs, but just go for two. The first round in which one team scores and the other team doesn't ends the game. The new OT format, if adopted, and it probably will, would have the two-point shootout start after the second possession of overtime. I think those do-or-die two-point plays are amazing fun and really intense. I don't necessarily think that should be the entire OT, but I don't mind seeing more of it. So I support the rule. And again, it sounds like most of you don't. That is the show for today. I'd like to thank my producer, Sarah McCrory, for making me sound good. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts and Westwood One Podcast. Please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. If you have a question that you'd like me or my guests to answer, email them to aptop25mailbag@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you on all topics, college football, serious or silly. That's aptop25mailbag@gmail.com. I'm Ralph Russo, the college football writer with the Associated Press. Thanks for listening, and come back for more next week of the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast.